Ever wonder how a Comic-Con comes together? Here are two guys that know, because it's what they do every day. It's the Con Men Podcast. Now for another possible rant on where the Suicide Squad movie went wrong, it's Greg Adams and Puff.
And then we start. And yep, microphones are working. Your microphone's working, right?
Yeah, my microphone's on.
My headphones are not working.
That's because you're a loser.
Well, I guess that is part of the deal. All right, it is the Con Men Podcast, and that's Puff who called Greg me a loser, and that's how we're going to start today, because I am a loser, and we're actually displaced. We're not in our normal studio, which is a great track record for being the second episode.
Hey, who needs consistency? You keep on making these show plans that I just ignore because they're nonsense. We don't have a plan. We're a podcast.
I do have a plan. And part of the plan is to explain to everybody who we are and what we do. The reason that this podcast exists is because we work on a Comic-Con called GeekedCon, which is in Shreveport, Louisiana. And we put that event together, and because we do that, we thought that it was maybe something that everyone would be interested in to know how these things work, how we put our event together, how other Comic-Cons are put together, what goes into it, all of the hidden stuff that you don't think about when you either attend an event or you're thinking about starting an event. We can speak to a whole bunch of things that we have gone through positively and negatively to inform you about what it takes to put this event together. And what kind of pitfalls you may be running into if you're thinking about starting one.
It's ridiculous. That pretty much sums up the whole show. We can end it now. It's a ridiculous venture.
It's expensive.
Even if we tell you exactly step by step how to do one, you're still going to run into weird stuff because it's just a business. So there we are.
My headphones suddenly started working. I hate this studio.
Well, I'm sure the studio hates you, much like I do.
Ah, yes, yes, yes. Okay. So... That's the idea, though. We are here to talk about Comic-Cons and other geeky stuff, and we'll get to those things.
Right now, because I have a thing for you.
Oh, you're going to do the surprise now? I was going to save it for topic two.
See, Mr. Organized, I'm just throwing a wrench into your plans, because that's what I do, baby.
All right, go ahead. What do you got?
Well, it's Thanksgiving. This is the Thanksgiving special of the Con Man Podcast. So I say we talk about what we're thankful for in the Nerdiverse.
Wait, that's really it? Like, of all things, of all the biggest surprise that I thought I was going to get? Ah, yes.
Drinking on the show. I'm pretty sure that's a fine somewhere.
No. You're the one that told me it's a podcast. There are no rules.
Yeah, that's fair.
Okay, so what we are thankful for in a geeky sense?
In the Nerdiverse.
Okay. Do you want to go first to set the tone?
Sure. I am thankful for Swamp Thing. I am thankful for the DC Universe because that is like the best $7.99 I've spent in a while outside of Disney Plus. I am thankful for all the wonderful vendors that make GeekCon possible, and I am thankful that Thomas Jane and John Bernthal and even Dolph Lundgren brought the Punisher to life.
Okay, wow, you just like rattled off everything. I thought maybe we were gonna go back and forth. See, this is why there's a plan. Like, this is why there's...
We don't need no stinking plans.
So, what am I thankful for in the Nerdiverse? I am thankful for the fact that we have a support structure through sponsors and ticket buyers and vendors and celebrities who allow us to actually have this little Comic-Con event. It is actually, in all honesty, it's pretty life-changing. If this particular, if GeekedCon in Shreveport didn't exist, there's no telling where I am, what I'm doing. So it's kind of cool, and I'm very thankful for it.
That's all code for Greg saying, I'm super pumped that I'm friends with LeVar Burton on Twitter.
No, that's not what that is. But uh-huh. I am thankful for some of the Twitter followers that come along with this kind of thing. I'm thankful for Disney Plus, and I'm thankful for The Mandalorian.
Oh, such a great show.
I grew up a big Boba Fett fan. There was a resurgence when I was a kid of Star Wars, and I latched on to Boba Fett. I've got the Jeremy Bullock autographs in the office. I'm pretty sure, did I bring the pop figure in? I might not have the pop figure in the office. But I've got a Boba Fett coffee mug at home. Like, I'm all in as far as Star Wars goes. My depth of Star Wars is Boba Fett. So to have a Mandalorian show that is as good as this is, I am so thankful for
that. Oh, I'm thankful for Jon Favreau.
Jon Favreau, yes.
Or whatever, however the hell you say his name. God bless him. He brought us Iron Man. He brought us The Mandalorian. And he brought us Baby Your Money. What the hell was the name of that movie?
Vince Vaughn and... we're going to get so beat up over this.
God, my brain just went blank.
There was a resource.
Yeah, use your phone. I'll stall for time.
Hold on.
You're so money. You're so money right now, kid. Come on. You got this.
Why is this not... in my, it should already be in my mind banks.
I want to say Made, but I think that was his second movie, not the first one.
Made and Swingers.
Swingers. That's,
yep.
You're so money. Yes. That, I'm thankful for that. Made was good too, by the way. But it was no Swingers.
Wait. Were both these guys in Rudy?
Of all the things that...
hold on. I know, like, I seem to remember Vince Vaughn was in Rudy. But I didn't know that. Hold on, now I got to look this up. This is gonna.
You know what? I'm not thankful.
Jon Favreau was in Rudy.
I'm not thankful that Rudy became a topic on this podcast.
Jon Favreau and Vince Vaughn were both in Rudy. What is happening right now?
Oh boy, I regret this decision immediately.
Wow. Okay, so I'm thankful that Jon Favreau and Vince Vaughn were both in Rudy. That's gonna be trivia for me moving forward. You know, I'm thankful that I have a family who are embracing of my geek nature. My kids are all into it because kids are, I mean, a lot of kids lean geeky.
Well, your kids are super nerdy. They're in the magic and Pokemon and video games and all that stuff.
And it's totally okay. And my wife is not a geek. She is really heavily not a geek. But she puts up with it and allows it. And when I say, hey, I'd like to go to a Comic-Con a few hours away, I'd like to pack all the kids in the car and drive there, she's totally okay with it.
Well, that's because in her mind, that's like daycare for the boys while she goes and does her own thing.
No, she comes and participates. So, like, we're going to be going to one. Again, recording a podcast, time sensitive. I don't know when this is going to play. This will probably post after we've already gone to the event. But we're going to be going to an event in Dallas, and she's going to be there with us. So she's going to just wander around and take in the event.
And then go to the Galleria while you guys are playing Magic.
No, we're literally going to go there. We're going to enjoy the show. We're going to turn around and drive home. She's actually making the trip to Dallas strictly to go to the show with us.
Surprising.
So I'm thankful for my wife, who allows me to be a giant man-child.
That's a great way to put it. You know what else I'm thankful for? War Games. And CM Punk. And Adam Cole. I'm thankful for all of it. It's a good year. It's been a good year this year.
I'm thankful for AEW bringing, like, actual wrestling storylines to TV for the first time in...
We're going to have to save that for another time. Because we don't have enough time for me to yell at you and just go full Jim Cornette.
Which I do want to take a step back and let everyone know that, yes, we're talking about pro wrestling because pro wrestling is geeky. And before we get into the actual topic, unless you got anything else you want to say you're thankful for.
Let's
Rudy and Jon Favreau.
No, I am thankful. I am thankful for Vince Vaughn. I love that guy. Well, while we're on the subject of pro wrestling, I'm thankful for Mick Foley.
Okay, all right.
I love that guy.
So let's take a moment to explain something that comes up every single year, and then we'll get to our actual official topic for the day. But this will bleed into that a little bit because we are here to talk about Comic-Cons. That's the point of the podcast, is to talk about Comic-Cons. And when it comes to Comic-Cons, there's an increasingly... It's either growing or it's becoming more aggressive. There's a gatekeeper mentality that exists within this culture. And I think it was one of the Star Wars directors or somebody, one of the writers, somebody in the recent Star Wars, and I wish I could remember who it was because I'd like to give them the credit for this quote, but they were just talking about how fan bases are becoming toxic, and any fan base can become toxic, but not all fans are toxic. It was a really, like, I felt the quote when I read it. And this is part of it, is the whole gatekeeper mentality. So with Comic-Cons, you will see professional wrestling guests booked into these shows.
And sports people and all kinds of folks.
And that is because these events are geeky in nature. And you can be a geek about pretty much anything. Like, if you're into pro wrestling, that's pretty geeky. If you're into horror movies, that's pretty geeky.
Well, you know what the weird thing is? I know where you're going. Is like, all this stuff is available at every local comic book store in America. There's a reason why every comic book store sells sports cards.
Well, sports cards and some pro wrestling stuff. And they've got magic cards. Yeah. And they got horror merch. And because we're all geeks. And I grew up in an era that was slightly before geeks being cool. So when I was a kid and I had my Marvel trading cards and my... So Pokemon was probably about the point where it became sort of mainstream and cool to be kind of geeky. But before that, I had my Star Wars toys and my Mighty Max figures and my X-Men toys. And it was still kind of geeky. So where I grew up, I was an hour and a half away from my nearest comic book store.
Yikes.
So I didn't get to go pick up comic books weekly. I actually live far enough away that I had to have my mail order comic subscriptions.
Oh, you got the subscriptions through like DC, yeah, where you fill out the little thing on page 9?
And I didn't have that many DCs. Most of mine were Marvel coming in. So I was getting X-Men 2099. I was getting Spider-Man 2099 for a little while. I was getting not the main Uncanny X-Men book, but the X-Men that started like... that was running parallel with the Fox Kids TV show.
It was sort of like the Batman animated series comic book, except for the X-Men. Yeah.
Yep. And I alternated on a few other things that I would get them for my birthday or whatever, but I would get comic books in the mail. That's how my comic subscriptions went. And so I was the nerdy kid who was getting comics in the mail. And in a small town like that, I was the only kid with comics. So yeah, I was geeky. And now geeky is so mainstream with the biggest movies every summer being comic book based. Like, it's totally okay to be a geek now. I grew up in an era when it wasn't. So to have people that are so comfortable within the geek culture being able to try and become gatekeepers for other geeks, like, we should all be in this together, because there was a point in our lifetimes where being the geek wasn't cool. And now that being the geek is cool, it's like we're trying to double down and out-geek other geeks by saying, oh, you're into wrestling? Well, wrestling's not geeky, so it doesn't belong at a Comic-Con. It absolutely freaking does.
All of it does. It's just like, think of Comic-Cons as your comic book store. It's all there, man. Although, and I don't want to disparage any fan groups, but there's one certain faction of folks that are like the super weird ones. Anime kids.
You know, no, I'm not going to do that. I thought you were going to say something about a whole nother fan faction, but kind of that's sort of the thing.
But yeah, but it's just like they're their own little thing, which is cool. But, you know, we should be able to bring them into it.
They do. They belong. I have nothing. No, they shouldn't be separated. They should all be in. We're all in the same group together. Now, if maybe I misunderstood what you said right away, I have noticed that there is a larger amount of the Japanese anime fans who seem to be gatekeepers
That's what I mean. They sort of block themselves off from the rest of the world.
Well, and even within that, there's a lot of infighting over, like, do you watch an English dub? Do you watch with subtitles? So there's fights within that. And then we do have some pushback sometimes on both sides, which is really where I want to get to. When we announce a guest and it's a pro wrestler, we hear from people who say, why are you putting a pro wrestler at this type of event? They don't belong. Well, at the same time, we're getting people saying, this is so great. You need to book all these other pro wrestlers. And the Japanese anime thing is the same thing. We announce that we've got some anime guests coming, and we have a bunch of people who go, oh, does Japanese anime really belong at a Comic-Con? And then we have a bunch of people within the Japanese anime culture saying, oh, we need more. We need all of these. Get this one. Get this bigger one. And then even within that, you have people saying, well, why are you bringing the English dub voice? You need to get the actual voice. So all of those levels of gatekeeping, it's just...
weird.
It is very weird, because we should all be supportive of one another and our little fandoms. Because, again, there was a point in most of our lives where it wasn't cool to be that geek.
Well, exactly. And it's not like anybody's like holding a gun to you and saying, hey, you have to go meet Hacksaw Jim Duggan. Yeah, if you don't like it, if that's not your thing, cool, go hang out with the Dragon Ball Z guys or whoever happens to be around.
Well, like, so last year we had the three headliners were Michael Rooker, LeVar Burton, and Trish Stratus. A pro wrestler was one of our headliners last year. You can come to the event because you want to meet LeVar Burton, and you're never going to go by Trish's table.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you can still come hang out with LeVar Burton. You might come just to meet Michael Rooker. You don't care about LeVar Burton. That's fine, too.
You got options. It's like going to a buffet. Nobody says you have to eat the bread pudding.
Okay, so that little gatekeeper thing is not what the topic was. The topic itself is actually about vendors. Because in the first episode, we talked about booking guests. And vendors is sort of in the same vein. So I wanted to spend some time talking about that a little bit, because just like when we announce a guest and somebody wants to push back against, oh, I don't like that fandom, or I don't like that movie, or I don't like that role that they had. When it comes to the vendors, we have people who complain about that on an annual basis as well.
Yeah, which is really weird. Because it's not like you have to buy the wizard wand or whatever. You can just be like, eh, that's somebody's thing, and go to the next table where there's pop figures or whatever you're into.
But there seems to be an abundance of people who... We set up... I'd have to go back and look at the numbers, but I think I can safely say that we set up more than 200 individual vendor spaces. Now, some of those were for artists. Some of those were for guests. Mm-hmm. But the vast majority of those, I think individual vendor spaces, we have over 100 easily. Some of those are like 10 by 20 spaces. Some of them are 10 by 30. Some are 20 by 20 and so on and so on. But we set up over 100 different unique vendors every year. Now, there are some shows, and this is just our show. So I do want to let these other shows breathe, because some shows are in smaller areas and have lower overhead costs, and they can be more judicious when it comes to who they book, not book, but who they allow to be a vendor. So if a show is a smaller space than ours is, and their overhead isn't as much, so they only need to fill 50 vendor spaces, and they have 75 people apply to be vendors or fill out vendor paperwork, they have the luxury of being able to go through those and pick and choose who they want at the show and who they don't. So if they figure, we've got three comic book retailers already, that's the cap. No more comic books. If they have five pop figure vendors, that's our cap. We're not going to do any more. If they've got three t-shirts, that's our cap. We're not doing any more. Shows like ours, we don't have that luxury.
I wouldn't even call it a luxury. We just have so much room that we have options.
Well, it's and with that room comes overhead cost.
Mm-hmm.
So we have costs and a line-by-line budget that I look at on, if not a weekly, a daily basis to try and accommodate everything that we want to accomplish. We want to have certain levels of guests so the fans can come in and meet a certain level of people. There are expectations that we have from the ticket-buying audience for who they want to see, or the caliber of guests that they are coming to expect now. And in order to get those things done, we have to have certain numbers of vendors, sponsors, to accomplish those objectives.
Mm-hmm.
So with our space, we have to have X number of vendors that will cost X number of dollars. If we've got 115... just pulling that number for easy math, 115 vendor spaces that we build every year, unique vendor spaces. If we had 175 people apply for those or fill out forms for those, we would potentially have the luxury of starting to pick and choose who comes in. But we struggle every year. Not struggle, but we work every year. We work all the way until the day of the event to get those vendor spaces filled. And we need those vendor spaces filled to be able to afford to put the show on. So when somebody comes into an event like ours and they see somebody who is a retail operation that may not be specific to the geek world, and I'm trying to think of a way to bring one up without being too specific.
Well, if somebody's selling, let's just say, blankets or whatever, and it's like, why are they blankets? Well, there's like Superman blankets. Who cares?
So more along the lines of if there is a satellite TV retailer or just thinking in the past of what we've seen. We've had insurance agents. We have had colleges. We have had restaurants that have all come on as sponsors and vendors and have set up. And we get complaints over those people being set up. We get complaints over a restaurant being there or over a school being there.
Well, you know what the weird thing is? Those places, because they're partnering up with us, usually do some pretty cool stuff. And I don't think some of those people that complain are giving them enough credit that, hey, there's a video game program at X College, or, hey, they're having a Halloween or a superhero theme party at X restaurant, or, you know, whatever the case may be.
But even if it's just a school that's there talking to kids about admissions, for me, when I see that kind of stuff, when I see, if you want to call them a mainstream vendor that's coming into a geek culture, I view that as them supporting the culture.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times we have had outside retailers, outside of the geek normal world, who are selling something that wouldn't normally be geek related, who are coming in because somebody owns the business that's a geek, the manager is a geek, their marketing person's a geek, and they know that there are other like-minded geeks, and this is a way that they can talk to those individuals. And it's worked out in a lot of cases. The best example that I can give is when we had a mattress store in who sold $30,000 worth of beds while they were at the show for a weekend, which is insane. But they did what you were talking about. They didn't just set up and say, like, here, buy this bed, lay on this bed, try this bed, which also, after walking around that much on the floor, laying on one of their beds was actually pretty cool. But what they did is they had one of those incline beds, and they set up a game system and a TV so they could show you how easy it is to lean forward in their bed, lay down on an incline, and play a video game.
Yeah.
It's brilliant.
Yes.
And it worked, and it sold beds. We had an insurance agent in because when I sat down and met with him, the insurance agent's husband was a huge geek and was trying to find a way how she could get into the show. And so I sat down and met with her, and what I found out is actually something that impacted me a little bit. So if you have homeowner's insurance or renter's insurance, let me give everybody a sales pitch right now. If you have homeowners or renters insurance and you have a giant collection, if you have high-end comic books, if you have collectible action figures, if you have anything that has value as a collectible, it is likely not covered by your homeowners or renters insurance.
No kidding.
You actually have to have a separate policy on collectibles. So if you were to suffer a total loss house fire, not even a total loss, if just your room with your collectibles, if you had a New Mutants 98 graded at a 9.8, and that thing burned in a house fire,
or the water heater blew up of above and flooded your stuff, whatever the case may be.
Whatever destroys your collectibles, if they are not individually insured, they may not be covered by your policy. And when I learned that, it was instantly like, you have to come tell people this. And she came out and she helped educate some high-end collectors that they're, and when I say high-end collectors, we have people at our show who have six-figure collections. They've got gigantic collections. And those people found out that their collections were not insured. And now they are insured, because if you're going to put that much money into your collection, you better insure it.
Absolutely.
So when you see some of those surface things at a Comic-Con and you say, oh, here's this, I can't believe they've got this in here. That could have been, and this is the fallacy. This is where it falls apart. We'll hear people say, that vendor space taken up by that insurance agent, that could have been a pop figure vendor. That could have been the horror-based comic book retailer that only carries the horror books that I'm interested in. That could have been them. But that's not actually the case, because those vendors that people think that it could have been aren't coming. They're not. They weren't knocking on the door. They weren't emailing saying, hey, do you have an extra space? No, I'm sorry. We're reserving it for a mattress store. No, I'm sorry, we're reserving it for an insurance agent. No, we've got a college that we're reserving it for. That's not the case. Those other vendors aren't coming. So it's either an empty space, and if we have too many of those, we don't have a show, or it's a college talking to kids that they know are going to work for their visual arts department.
And like most things, you don't knock it until you actually talk to these people, because you're probably missing whatever, something important that they're trying to sell you.
Well, like you had said about the wands.
Yeah.
You know, if you're not looking for a Harry Potter wand, you're not going up to the Harry Potter booth. somebody who is looking for it
is super pumped.
So somebody who's there, who's you know, a junior in high school, who's getting ready to make a big decision about school, suddenly they see, oh, this college is here. If this college is here, that means they get me as an individual. They embrace my culture, this geek culture. You might not even go talk to them, but that's...
It sticks out in your brain. You remember it.
They support what I like. And so that's what we see a lot. And there are vendor shows who do have the luxury of being able to pick and choose and say, no, you know, we do have 35 pop figure vendors that want in. So we can sell 35 spaces to pop vendors and we don't have to worry about all of these other type of vendors. This is particular to our show. There are other shows who have an extensive artist alley process where you have to send in examples of your work to get a space in their artist alley. Again, we are working and efforting all the way until the event to get those artist alley spaces sold. Last year, we reduced the number because it was difficult to do, and we sold those out really quick. So then we expanded to a bigger space and ended up struggling to get those last ones sold. So it's a juggling act.
Well, the point is, if you got one of these type of events in your community, like it, love it, support it. Who cares who's there? Unless it's one of those timeshare places. Screw those people. You want to go to Florida? I hate Florida.
You hate Florida. Yeah, I don't know how many times I heard that last time we were at a show. But that was something that, and if you're putting a show together, if you're thinking about getting one off the ground, maybe in your second year, we're trying to give examples of things that you might be able to avoid that we've fallen into. If you are an early show, if you're in your second or third year and you're thinking to yourself, oh no, I have to have these vendors. I can't allow these vendors in or else my show's going to fall apart. You can't do that. You have to make sure that your overhead is met. You have to make sure that you stay on budget. Otherwise, there's just not going to be an event.
Well, that, and as we've talked about extensively for the past 5-10 minutes, most of those places are there because their heart's in the right place and end up being pretty cool for your event.
Yeah, there's actually, that's a good call, because we've had some vendors who fit that geek mold.
That were just not, I don't want to say terrible, but...
Well, there are some negative people in this industry, and there are some people who are difficult to work with, and there are some people who are...
Awesome.
Yeah, but there are people who are toxic to have on site... That may fit a geek vendor space.
Oh, I just remembered one.
But at the end of the day, it would have been more beneficial for your event to have a college there who you can pretty much trust, or one of these more toxic vendors. So if you're a medium-sized show, if you're making some jumps now, maybe you're moving from a ballroom to a convention center, do be wary of some of those vendors that may either seem too good to be true, or I actually just saw this one, and this is the last thing I'll say on vendors. I know you hate vendors. You don't deal with the vendors. I do, so I could talk about it all day.
I don't hate vendors. Remember, I was hitting up people like, hey, you got awesome stuff.
That's not what I mean. I mean, dealing with putting the floor space together and all of that stuff.
Oh, yeah, you do the floor layout. Oof, that would give me a migraine.
All of that stuff. It all plays in together, and... There was something that came up on one of the social media groups that I'm a part of with all these Comic-Con things. And it is a common theme for people who are running shows to have vendors. If you've got 3 or 4 spaces left, you'll get a vendor that shows up at the last minute, like the week before the show. And, hey, do you have any spaces left? And if you're trying to maneuver some stuff, like, okay, yeah, I can make space for one more. Oh, I need a 10x20. Okay, well, we can rearrange some things. We can make a 10x20 happen. Okay, cool. It needs to be a corner. And you've got all the corners sold out, so you got to tell them, like, there is no corner. Okay, well, if there's no corner, I don't know if I can do it. And so then, you know, you get into this system where you're trying to, like, accommodate for somebody. And then they get to the last part where after you've already talked to somebody who's now moved so you can get a corner for this person, do I get a half-price discount because I'm at the last minute?
Ugh.
Like, no, you don't. Like, they're so... The discounts for vendors, and this is the difficult thing, it's a balancing act. There are some vendors that you really want to have at your show, but you have an overhead. You have to hit a budget. You have to know, if this were another business, if you owned just a shoe store, and somebody came in and said, oh, it's 5 minutes before you close today, then can I have this pair of shoes for half off? You in no way, shape, or form would ever do that.
No.
And you know, friends and family, yes, you can help them. You can do some things to accommodate them. But if you give away everything in the shoe store, you're going to end up going out of business. You're going to be payless. You can't give away everything in the store. You actually have to make money on these events, which is the downside to this. I don't do this to make money. My goal in this is to provide an awesome event that wouldn't be in this community if not for what we're doing. But in order to do that, we have to be able to pay for it. Because if the companies behind these events start losing money, they just stop doing the event. And
absolutely,
then your community doesn't have it anymore. So support it through buying sponsorships, buying vendors, buying tickets. Even if there's nobody on the guest list that you need to have an autograph from, buy a ticket that year, go hang out for a little bit, shop a vendor, because maybe next year they'll have that guest you want. But if you don't buy the ticket, if you don't participate, there probably won't be a next year. So you definitely will not see the guest you want.
I think the point you're trying to make in a very long-winded way is,
oh boy,
it's all love, man. If you're a vendor, don't be a duty head. If you're a showrunner, don't be a duty head. If you're a fan, don't be a duty head. We're all in this together. We're trying to help each other out, and it's good for everybody if we're not fighting and being crappy.
Why are you trying to? This is like, you are really trying to make this into a holiday special. This is the opposite of your normal, the whole don't be a duty head to everybody, peace and love, peace and love. You're making this into a Thanksgiving special, and it's really, like, worrying me.
Well, I mean, if everybody's at their throats like, you know, rival tribes, nobody has a happy ending. This is all about the conventions and the community. It's got to have a happy ending, or we might as well just wrap up our show, this podcast, and everything, and go home.
All right, we are going to actually try to have a happy ending to this podcast. We're going to take a very short break. We'll come back with our little tell a story feature. We're going to reach into Chewbacca's head, and we're going to get a topic to talk about.
The Con Men Podcast is brought to you by GeeksCon, Shreveport's Comic-Con. You can find ticket and vendor info at geekscon.com.
It is the Con Men Podcast. Greg Adams here. Puff is over there. This is our little tell a story feature. This is usually how we try to wrap up a show. We've got a whole bunch of topics inside Chewbacca's head, and we are going to sort through them real quick. Not sort through them. I'm going to dig through them. We're going to find a good one, and then we're going to talk about whatever it is. So these are topics that you and I are not going to know what they are prior to. What?
Well, I was going to do a drum roll as soon as
talking. Let's not do a drum roll. Let's just talk through this. I'll throw those over there. We'll take this one. It is, for 2019, the biggest geek Xmas gifts.
Well, let's see here. Star Wars is going to be huge thanks to The Mandalorian.
That's the only thing that I'm thinking about right now, because you were just talking about it.
The child, as he's been dubbed, Baby Yoda, is going to be everywhere. T-shirts, plushies, pop figures, you name it. It's going to be under your Christmas tree. Plus, the new Star Wars video game, pretty damn good. And there's a few places that have it for way less than retail.
And speaking of the video games, the new Pokemon Sword and Shield, that's going to be huge this holiday season. Mm-hmm. I think everything Pokemon is probably going to be huge, because anytime there are new games that are released, everything kind of has a little uptick. The Pokemon Go stuff it came up a little bit. Now it kind of leveled back off. But Pokemon's always big. I'm trying to think of what I've seen that's been huge geek-wise, and the only thing that I'm really seeing over and over and over again is Baby Yoda.
Yeah, tons of Baby Yoda. I think there's it's not a new system, but Xbox or PlayStation's putting out like a whole Star Wars bundle for the holidays where you can get a bunch of the games, including the new one, and like a droid looking system. I'm pretty sure it was Xbox.
Really?
But, yeah.
Black Box Star Wars figures too. Mm. Since everything seems to be Star Wars. Well, we do also have a Star Wars movie coming out.
That's another
December.
Thing.
So with it is going to be a heavy Star Wars holiday season. And one of the things that's cool about the holidays is that there's so many geek themed holiday
stuff.
Yeah, like everything that is geeky is going to have something holiday related. So it may not be what the biggest, I mean, if we're going to give some recommendations to people who are like shopping for a geek, just find out what it is that person's into geek-wise, and then find something holiday-related for that. I was just in the store the other day looking for something for my son's birthday, and they have a whole bunch of Christmas pajamas that have geek stuff on them. So they're like Yoda wearing a Santa hat just on pajama pants. And they had it for, like, Pikachu was on there, too. There were some Mario Brothers holiday stuff. So pretty much anything that's kind of geeky, there's some Christmas stuff-oriented. And you can just get that.
Plus, you know, like Marvel, DC, pretty much any video game retailer, Amazon, they got those Black Friday, Cyber Monday deals where if you have a Batman fan, you can clean up and get all sorts of Batman stuff on the cheap.
Man, I don't like that topic. Let me see if I can find another one of these. This is.
Yeah, let's do another one.
We're going to save that one. We're going to save that one. Oh, okay, here's another one that kind of fits into this. Your favorite geek holiday toy, and when I wrote this, I meant like in your history, what's the best Christmas present you remember getting that's geek oriented?
Ooh, I'm gonna have to think about this. I know
I know mine, so you can think if you want me.
I'm trying to remember what all was in it. It was like a big display case of like a ton of X-Men the Animated Series figures.
Really?
Yeah, it was like a. It was a three-tier thing that had Professor X, Weapon X, Wolverine, like just various different characters from the show. And it was like in almost a glass case. I'm going to see if I can find it on Google.
That sounds freaking awesome. Okay, so what I remember, and for a lot of people it's probably along the same lines, is getting a video game system for Christmas is always a great geek prize. My mom did it one year where we actually unwrapped gifts that had the letters S-E-G-A spelled out, but we didn't get them in order, so like we're getting them and we're trying to spell like ages, we're trying to spell all this stuff, and finally she comes over and just spells Sega, and we freaked out, and we got the Sega with the 32X attachment, and we had Sonic the Hedgehog and a couple other, we had a Clay Fighter game, I think it was called Clay Fighter. There were a couple of things that we got that year. It was That was probably, I got the old NES too. Like that was one of my earliest memories, playing Duck Hunt on a Christmas morning.
Yes, here it is, the Uncanny X-Men Mutant Hall of Fame.
What? Oh my God!
Yeah. That was the one that stuck out. Of course, I got video games like, I got a Sega CD one year.
Oh, geez.
And then
your Christmases were better than mine.
And then one year, I saved up all my money from allowance and stuff, and I bought myself, what was the Sega add-on?
The 32X. Yeah, that's what I had.
Yeah. I couldn't remember the name of it, but I got that. And what was the comic book game where you fought through like an actual comic book series?
Oh, dang. It sounds kind of familiar, but I don't remember what it is. But I like.
Holy crap, this thing's selling on eBay for $90 right now?
Yeah, it's a difficult. I hate going back and looking at this stuff that I destroyed when I was a kid.
I actually might have this still in my closet.
See, now my difficulty in remembering some of the old ones is that I have a winter birthday. And growing up in northern Michigan, we had snow for Christmas 90% of the time. And then my birthday was in February, so we had snow. So sometimes it's hard to differentiate, did I get it for Christmas or my birthday? But one year I got Ecto-1, the Ghostbusters toy car.
Yes, I always wanted one of those. I never got one.
And I can't remember if it was my birthday or Christmas, but I remember opening that box vividly because it's one of those years where I had resigned myself to the fact I'm not getting it. Like, it's the one thing I asked for, and I knew that I'm just not getting it. I'm going to get all this other stuff, and that'll be the one thing I don't get. Maybe I'll save my birthday money. And I remember opening it and being like, wow, this is what dreams are made of. All right, that's enough of our rambling.
I just bought a Mutant Hall of Fame.
Of course you did. Of course you did. That'll probably be in. Maybe when we get back to our normal studio, we can start putting some geek stuff in there.
Yeah, that my Ewok Village.
Oh, yeah, the $200 Ewok Village. You need to drop eBay for a little while. All right, we are back every week, and we're going to talk about Comic-Con stuff as much as we can, and we're going to talk just some random geek stuff like that, too. There's a whole bunch of Comic-Con stuff that we can get into, whether it surrounds our personal event, GeekedCon in Shreveport, Louisiana, or we're referencing some other events. In the next couple of weeks, we'll talk about the trip that I'm taking to Dallas for a show over there. Hey, maybe in a couple of weeks we can talk about our recent joint venture that we went on.
To New Orleans.
Yeah, so maybe we can talk about that show in particular. Maybe that'll become a staple of what we do, is like review other shows. But we talk about Comic-Cons. We try to bring people into how these shows come together, maybe reveal some of the things that you might not think about when you're thinking about a show. Or if you're putting a show together yourself and trying to get one off the ground, we can tell you about the things that we've failed doing so you don't fail in the same way.
And the point here, we've mentioned it a couple of times, just be nice to each other.
And the more you say that, this is the worst holiday special ever. Okay.
What?
It is the Con Men Podcast. You can find us on Spotify. And we are working, again, recording. We may be available on iTunes and Google as this is playing for somebody. You might have downloaded this on iTunes and hearing us say, oh, we might be on iTunes soon.
Well, the weird thing is they don't tell you how long the approval process is. So it's literally, it could be 2 hours or it could be 2 weeks. So,
and who knows? You could be listening to this in 2020. Because you just found the podcast and you're listening to all the episodes. So,
and if you did, happy Thanksgiving from the past.
Yes.
Or are we the future?
The ghost of Thanksgiving futures past. If we couldn't get another X-Men reference, maybe we can do a Days of Future Past. All right. It's the Con Men Podcast.